Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I hate to say we're waiting for the boot to drop or the lightning to fall, but that's kind of where we're in.
Fire crews in the interior are on standby as the weather forecast calls for thunderstorms. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 17th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, St. Mary's residents are staying cautious as the threat of fire there decreases.
The frozen food and the dried food are in 5-gallon buckets, and our clothing and the blankets and stuff are in plastic bags.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
U.S. House candidate Mary Peltola rose slightly in today's updated ballot count. That's in the special primary election to fill the seat for the remaining months of the year. She now has more than 9% of the vote, and the Associated Press is declaring her the fourth place winner of the primary. Peltola is thrilled.
I'm very happy. I am very, very grateful. And every time there's a ballot count, I'm just happier and happier.
She's up about 2 percentage points since the counting started Saturday. Peltola, a Democrat, joins Republicans Sarah Palin and Nick Begich and nonpartisan Al Gross on the special general ballot in August. Palin is far in the lead with almost 28%. That's down about 2 points from Saturday. The Division of Elections is counting ballots roughly in chronological order of when they received them. So pollster Ivan Moore says it's not surprising that Palin has ticked down a little.
Her kind of ardent supporters are going to get the ballot in the mail straight away. As soon as they receive it, they'll send it back.
Moore says Democrats and progressives did the opposite, holding on to their ballots as they pondered which candidate they liked and who they thought had a chance.
Because they were all wringing their hands, wondering who to vote for, you know, agonizing over the choice between Peltola or Constant or whoever else, Santa Claus even, or Al Gross, you know. And so they were all leaving it to the end.
The Division of Elections is continuing to receive and count mailed ballots until Tuesday. The Associated Press estimates that more than 90% of the ballots are counted already. Light rains overnight tamped down fire activity as firefighters working on the massive tundra fires in western Alaska built containment lines to protect the nearby community of St. Mary's. Officials say there's no reason for residents to be worried about the fire coming closer to the village for now, but as Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, many residents are still wary.
Speaking on Friday morning, St. Mary's City Manager Walton Smith says things are still pretty smoky in the village of about 600 people on the Yukon River.
From where I'm living, in fact, I can stand out on this porch and see all the fire. I mean, a lot of it's coming behind ridges that I don't see the flame, but yeah, I can see it pretty easily.
He says smoke has died down substantially since Thursday when he could hardly see the half mile across the Andrevsky River. Rains tamped down on fire activity, and fire crews built containment lines around the southern flank of the fire just north of St. Mary's. Officials say they're no longer advising residents to be ready to evacuate as of Friday morning. Smith says he still hopes people will be cautious.
I want to make sure that people realize that doesn't mean you can forget about it and not think you might have to evacuate, just that the probabilities are lower.
About 50 residents who had evacuated to Bethel last week returned to St. Mary's and neighboring Mountain Village on Thursday. But most residents, like Teresa Joe, stayed in town, even as flames reached within 3.5 miles of St. Mary's. Joe says even though official warnings have been lifted, she's still keeping her things packed. She says she and her parents will flee in their boat upriver if the fire kicks back up.
The frozen food and the dried food are in 5-gallon buckets, and our clothing and the blankets and stuff are in plastic bags.
Officials say rain overnight helped slow the fire activity, but the region needs a lot more to end the fire threat. Alaska Interagency Coordination Center spokesperson Jacob Welsh says around St. Mary's, only about a hundredth of an inch fell.
So what that did was it moderates fire activity. It keeps it from being as active, but the tundra is still dry. The fuels out there are dry, so it's still carrying through the tundra and through the spruce trees.
There's no significant rainfall in the forecast in the next few days. Welsh says without a lot more rain, the risk of smoke or new wildfires in the region could continue throughout the summer. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Lex Trinan.
While large tundra fires in western Alaska continue to burn, fire officials say this weekend they're also concerned about the potential for wildfires in other areas of the state, like interior Alaska. Division of Forestry spokesperson Sam Harrell says interior crews have responded to a few fires in recent days. So far, crews have been able to keep them away from property, but he says the weather forecast for this weekend calls for possible thunderstorms.
These have a habit of casting lightning off in areas other than right underneath the cell where it's raining. And it may not immediately strike a fire, but the potential for it to smolder for a couple of days and then come back on a bluebird, sunny day is very real.
Harrell says lightning is typical in the interior, but with little rain so far this summer, the forests are particularly flammable. He says crews from Alaska and the lower 48 are on standby.
I hate to say we're waiting for the boot to drop or the lightning to fall, but that's kind of where we're in.
Statewide, there are about 90 fires burning. 13 of them are staffed with firefighters and the rest are being monitored. The largest is still the massive East Fork Fire that has spread across more than 150,000 acres of tundra in southwest Alaska. Firefighters are also working to contain the Iowithla Fire, burning 9 miles from Dillingham. The Juneau School District has new information about how floor sealant was served to students instead of milk. It says that last spring, a pallet of floor sealant was mistakenly delivered to a district warehouse reserved for food at the same time as 4 pallets of shelf-stable milk. The district did not say who delivered the pallet. On Tuesday, a worker from the district's food services contractor picked up 3 boxes from the sealant pallet and delivered them to servers at a summer school program. Servers poured the sealant into cups and served it to students. The district did not respond to requests for comment about the new information. Meanwhile, the Juneau Police Department says its investigation is still underway.
So we had detectives go there to start talking to people, not in a belief that there was any kind of criminal wrongdoing, because there just wasn't enough information at that time.
That's Lieutenant Craig Campbell. He said investigation results will first go to the district attorney's office. If no criminal charges are filed, the investigation results will be made public, either by the district or police. Campbell says the investigation is close to being done. He expects definitive answers and more information to be released by the end of next week. The COVID-19 pandemic contributed to a dramatic increase in excess deaths in Alaska in 2020 and 2021. That's according to a recent report from the state's Department of Health and Social Services. The report measured the deaths Alaska saw in those years against the deaths the department would have expected to see based on historical trends. The department reports 500 more deaths than expected in 2020 and over 1,400 more than expected in 2021. Almost half of those total deaths, the report says, were caused by COVID-19, and that number spikes to 57% of the total when accounting for deaths for which the virus was a contributing factor. The report also says the pandemic had secondary effects that could have compounded the overall excess deaths numbers, including strains on the medical system that could impact Alaskans who needed care for other reasons. Rose Avila, one of the authors of the report, says understanding those effects is important too.
It's kind of hard to figure out what the burden of the pandemic was, because it didn't, you know, just affect people that got COVID, but also, you know, there were economic strains, there were strains to the healthcare system, and a lot of those systematic changes could also impact mortality in general.
Excess death rates across Alaska were not distributed equally across demographics. In 2020, American Indian and Alaska Native people had the highest excess death rate by race. A recent report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found American Indian and Alaska Native people experienced disproportionately high rates of COVID illness, hospitalization, and death compared with white Alaskans. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, high gas prices aren't stopping RV owners from visiting Alaska.
I said, I don't care how much the price of fuel is, I'm going.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska's unique approach to mental health funding is improving the lives of Alaskans who experience behavioral health conditions and developmental disabilities. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority has a responsibility to generate revenue from its 1 million acres of land and the resources they contain. The trust uses this revenue to help fund statewide programs and initiatives that positively impact trust beneficiaries. To learn more, visit alaskamentalhealthtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Gas prices are up and hitting records across the U.S. It's a spike that experts in large part attribute to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and one that does not seem to be letting up anytime soon. That's something all drivers are noticing at the gas pump, but for vacationers driving RVs in Alaska, those costs are particularly notable. KDLL Sabine Pook spoke with some RVers in Soldotna and has this report.
1 gallon of unleaded gas costs, on average, about $5 in every state in the U.S. today. In Alaska and in Soldotna both, the average is about $5.60. Those prices could be enough to give even the most zealous road trippers pause. But not Randy Ferguson.
It's been on my bucket list for 40 years.
I hope it's living up to the expectations.
It is, yeah. And I said, I don't care how much the price of fuel is, I'm going.
Ferguson is visiting from Anaheim, California, and he's lounging in a camp chair in front of his coach bus-sized RV at the Klondike RV Park on Funny River Road in Soldotna. It's his first time visiting Alaska. He's already hit Seward and Homer, and he plans to go up to Denali and Fairbanks, too. That's even though it costs as much as $500 to fill up his tank every week or so. He's paid more for gas in this last month alone than he did on a 23-state road trip last year. But he says it's a cost he's willing to pay.
Here's the credit card, fill it up, you know, bingo, bango, boingo. I'm as happy as can be.
John Sarenzak has a similar attitude. He's newly retired from Dayton, Ohio. And he has the same logic for making the trek today.
But I'm getting older, and I thought I better do it while I can, so.
Still, he's paying twice as much for gas as he had planned to when he was first budgeting 3 years ago. Klondike RV Park owner Al Belknap says he's seen a mixed bag of reactions from would-be campers.
We had a lot of reservations already set up. We take reservations real early in January and February, and now we're starting to see some cancellations, but I think a lot of people are trying to stick to their plan no matter the cost.
His campground is still packed in mid-June, with RVs sporting a wide array of license plates. It's a shift from the last 2 years, when COVID restrictions made it hard for out-of-staters to get through Canada. Instead, Alaskans were buying RVs at higher rates and traveling within their own state.
That was pretty different for a couple of years, but now it's back to normal. Now we're kind of battling the gas prices and getting knocked backwards a little from that. But I think a lot of people are trying to come. The last couple of years have been rough. A lot of them have canceled a couple of years in a row, and they want to come bad.
John Anderson with Heritage RV Park in Homer is seeing much of the same. He says most of his 100-plus RV sites on the Homer Spit are full of out-of-staters every night this summer, and he doesn't anticipate a lot of guests changing course. His and Belknap's clients are mostly from the lower 48. Alaskans coming down for the weekend might have different considerations to weigh. Soldotna Parks and Recreation Director Andrew Carmichael says it's too early to tell what will happen at the campgrounds in Soldotna, where the vast majority of visitors are coming from around Alaska. He says last year was the biggest revenue year the city campsites had seen in many years, but that was mostly based on other factors, like good salmon fishing on the Kenai River.
If people are going to come down, they're going to come down for that purpose to a large degree. But then again, you know, the I guess if you could say there was a silver lining to the COVID pandemic stuff, is that it got people out and starting to recreate outdoors. So they are recreating outdoors more than they used to. So it's just hard to say.
There's no sure way to tell yet if campers will cancel their plans for the city-owned sites. The city doesn't take reservations. Sites are first come, first serve. Over at the Klondike, Frances Williams of Gooding, Ohio, is on the tail end of her trip. She planned the vacation last year when gas prices weren't as high. She and her son flew to Alaska and drove a camper down. Still, it was expensive.
It's just her budget, but we were already committed, so it was something, you just got to do it.
When it comes to the prices, she says it kind of is what it is. Ferguson from California agrees. He doesn't mince his words.
Hell no. No, I am not changing my trip. I'm going.
In his eyes, the trip of a lifetime is worth every expense. In Soldotna, I'm Sabine Pooks.
A major Bristol Bay processor has announced it will pay $1 per pound for Bristol Bay sockeye this season. That price is lower than last year's, and some fishermen are frustrated as they wrestle with high inflation and fuel prices. But as KDLG's Izzy Ross reports, company officials say that base price will likely increase.
Peter Pan Seafoods on Wednesday announced a base price of $1 per pound of Bristol Bay sockeye for the 2022 season. Peter Pan is the first processor to announce its base price, following a precedent it set last year, when it became the first major company in decades to tell fishermen what they would get paid before the season started. Peter Pan's Bristol Bay manager, Travis Roanfance, says the company wanted to let fishermen know the minimum price for their fish before they get out on the water.
We did that out of respect for our partners, the fishermen. And just like in 2021, this is a starting point for us. And we want to evaluate the fishery as it goes along, and we'll make adjustments to that price as the season progresses.
This year's $1 base price is just below the average for the past 12 years, and it is lower than 2021. Roanvance says the company knew this year's base price wouldn't be that popular, but officials still wanted to announce it early. Before last year, fishermen generally didn't know the minimum payment for their fish until well into the season.
We wanted the fishermen to have security that, you know, it's not going to be less than a dollar. We anticipate seeing it ratchet up. And so we're calling it an initial base price.
Bristol Bay is forecast to see over 70 million sockeye salmon return to the bay this season, with an estimated 60 million fish available to harvest. That's about double the long-term average, more than 40% above average for the last decade. Matt Cerf, a set netter in the Nooshigak District who fishes for Peter Pan, says the $1 base is a bit deflating. Still, he hopes the company will raise the price this season.
In current economic conditions, processors are getting pinched by labor costs and, you know, the whole cost of operations right now. And they could be passing the buck there to fishermen and leaving them holding the bag. But I am hopeful that a dollar isn't where it lands, and that it can at least keep pace with the increased cost of living that everyone's facing this year.
Inflation rates are at 40-year highs, and like many others, fishermen are dealing with skyrocketing costs of essential products such as food and gas. Roanfance with Peter Pan says higher costs and supply chain issues factored into this year's lower base.
You're definitely seeing an increase in transportation of employees in and out of the region. We're seeing increases in our freight, in our fuel. It's across the board.
Increasing the price will depend on things like the run timing, how many fish return, and how big they are.
I think you could see things as early as a few days, or it could take a couple weeks to see those things ratchet up.
Bristol Bay processors generally all pay the same base price for sockeye, though bonuses vary. So far, no other companies have announced what they will pay their fleet this season. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Air Cargo, providing Gold Streak Express shipping for urgent deliveries throughout Alaska, with connections to more than 100 destinations in the lower 48 and Hawaii. More at alaskacargo.com.
And by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein online at lbblawyers.com.
Summer school is in session for Anchorage School District students. District leaders say it's an opportunity to gain math and reading skills and to boost students' confidence after 2 years of the pandemic. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas visited a summer school classroom and has this report.
Yes, I move on. Melanie Franklin's summer school class at Hanshu Middle School only has 9 students in it on Thursday morning, but it's action-packed. The 6th, 7th, and 8th graders are seeing who can match vocabulary words and definitions the fastest. They run across the room carrying yellow pieces of paper with definitions printed on them. Franklin checks their work. Every wrong answer adds 10 seconds to their time.
All right, I have to check them because they have an impressive time. Let's see.
This team gets all the answers right. Yeah! Franklin says games like these help the kids stay focused.
Just keeps them engaged, but they're actually learning their vocabulary words.
Keeping kids engaged at summer school is especially important this year. Last year, the Anchorage School District ramped up summer programming in response to pandemic learning loss. It was the first time in several years that they'd held intensive summer programs. Joe Zawadny is the district's secondary education director.
Last summer, we were focusing on improving grades. This summer, we're supporting students with specific reading and math learning needs.
This year, nearly 8,000 students are enrolled. The district is spending $7.6 million on summer programs. Funds come from federal COVID grants and money the district already had in its budget for summer programming. Deputy Superintendent Mark Stock says in the fall, the district will compare math and reading scores of students who attended summer school and those who didn't. That will help them decide whether the investment was worth it.
If not, are we better off spending $7.6 million on after-school tutoring during the school year? Because it's a relatively major programs we're running.
He says he's hopeful the programs will both minimize the learning loss teachers see most summers and the gaps they've seen during the pandemic.
The pandemic loss is real, and it's not going to come back in 21 days of summer school. It's going to take a concerted effort over time, and this is just one strategy.
Teachers like Melanie Franklin are making that effort. Near the end of her class, she tells her students to get out their laptops or phones to play an online vocabulary game. Scores get updated in real time on a big screen at the front of the class. In the matching game earlier in the class, Jaden Hadley helped lead his team to victory. This time, one word was proving to be a challenge, necropolis.
This one, I don't even know how to say it. Necropolis.
Still, he doesn't seem too discouraged. He keeps playing, watching his score go up on the leaderboard with every answer he gets right. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
There's some optimism that the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Races Alaska and Yukon boards can heal their relationship. The two sides stopped talking in April after disagreements related to dog care, which began with a Yukon side proposal to dramatically increase the amount of mandatory rest along the 1,000-mile trail between Fairbanks and Whitehorse. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the split has scuttled plans to resume running of the traditional race following 2 years of cancellation during the pandemic.
COVID-19 is no longer the issue stopping the cross-border 1,000-mile Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race, but instead differences of opinion on how the race should be run, specifically whether or not the amount of mandatory rest should be increased. The rift has the Alaska and Yukon boards going their separate ways for now. Both are planning to again run shorter Quest races on either side of the border in February 2023. But Alaska Side Board President Mark Weber says the goal is to return to the traditional 1,000-mile race in 2024.
I think there's still hope in the future that there is some cooperation between the two organizations.
We've never said that we wouldn't negotiate. We've never tried to get in the way of any negotiation. And certainly no one here has shut the door.
Yukon Quest Canada operations manager John Hopkins Hill is clear that the dog care issue remains even after the Yukon side organization held its annual meeting June 14th and elected a new board.
This new board is just as dedicated to dog care and putting on the best races we can. And, you know, I sincerely hope, and I think the whole board hopes, or the board, I should say, hopes that that there will be more discussions, because no one over here has given up hope on holding a 1,000-mile race in the future.
I think both sides have that overall dream still.
Hopkins Hill and Weber say no talks are currently planned, but also that no actions have been taken to formally sever ties between the Alaska and Yukon organizations. Weber underscores that this isn't the first time the two sides have had differences since the race started back in 1984.
Over the last 39 years, there's been ups and downs on the communication between the two different boards. And this is certainly one of the lows, one of the downs. So we'll see what the future brings.
In the event the two sides cannot work out a way forward together, Weber says the Alaska board is discussing all Alaska 1,000-mile route options for 2024 and beyond. Meanwhile, preparations for next winter are in motion on both sides of the border. The Alaska board recently announced a plan to run a 550-mile race from Fairbanks to Tok, plus a 300-miler and an 80-mile fun run, with all races starting February 4th in Fairbanks. The Yukon side's 2023 race schedule includes a 450-mile race from Whitehorse to Dawson City, plus 250-mile and 100-mile events, with all three starting in Whitehorse February 18th. 2023 Yukon Quest race registrations open in Fairbanks and Whitehorse on August 6th. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Anchorage will celebrate Juneteenth with 2 days of activities in Delaney Park. The event will feature guest speakers, a pageant, music, dance performances, and food vendors. Juneteenth commemorates the ending of slavery in the United States. While the Emancipation Proclamation was enacted in 1863, it was not enforced in Texas until 1865. On June 19, 1865, a Union general informed Texans that all slaves were free. Jasmine Smith is the lead event coordinator for Juneteenth Anchorage. She says Juneteenth is an opportunity for the Black community to celebrate how far they've come.
The whole idea of Juneteenth is a celebration of freedom, you know, recognizing that someone had to work for well over a year before realizing that they were free. So for us on Juneteenth, we just kind of celebrate where we've come, our successes as a community, the work that we still have left to do.
Juneteenth became a federal holiday last year after years of advocacy. Smith says it was a big step for the country.
I'd be super double excited if it was also a state of Alaska holiday as well. So hopefully that could be our next goals. And then everyone in our state will be able to enjoy it together no matter what day of the week it falls on.
Smith says other Juneteenth events are being held online and in person in Homer, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Anchorage's two-day celebration begins on Saturday at 12:30 with a rally. The Anchorage Museum will also have free admission on Sunday in honor of the holiday. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Lex Trinan in Bethel, Claire Strempel in Juneau, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, Izzy Ross in Dillingham, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Are you ready to start accelerating your child's future through education? The Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program is expanding its reach with new opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. With ANSEP's Acceleration Academy, high school students can earn college credit, save thousands of dollars in college costs, and experience fun, hands-on learning. ANSEP, it's a better way to learn. Learn more and enroll at ansep.net/acceleration. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.